Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
With session in full swing, the Florida House and Senate are starting to work out the criminal justice budget.
As you know, all budgets tell a story, and this one absolutely does as well. This budget reflects a change in how we approach the criminal justice reforms in the future.
Also tonight, the fight over home rule is moving to the Florida Constitution Revision Commission.
There are people in the legislature who believe that home rule is a little bit like Girls Gone Wild.
We'll also get the latest on a major university's crackdown on Greek organizations after a student died in a hazing incident, and learn what the Florida legislature may do to help new moms overcome an often overlooked condition. We're kicking off week number 4 in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Even though the truly heavy lifting connected with putting together a total state of Florida budget remains weeks away, there are already some early signs of how things might go in this area. In one specific category of state spending, there's modest hope that common ground between the two legislative chambers may not be too far off. About $5 million now separates the Florida House and Senate's criminal justice budget, but as Sasha Cordner reports, while there are some differences, there are also areas where both chambers agree.
The Senate's budget proposal is just over $4.6 billion. St. Petersburg Republican Jeff Brandish chairs the Senate Budget Committee that looks at criminal justice issues. He says the budget reflects a change in how the Senate approaches future criminal justice reforms.
We will shift our focus towards a smart on crime model. This model reflects a paradigm shift that puts a greater emphasis on treatment of individuals in the criminal justice system. This budget tackles some critical issues affecting the health and safety of Florida's inmates.
For example, Brandis says he's looking into investing funds to reduce the number of low-risk offenders coming into the prison system. He's also investing funds into the court system.
We're investing significant funds in problem-solving courts to divert offenders from the prison. We recommend $4 million from recurring general revenue to expand the use of problem-solving courts to reduce the flow of inmates into the prison system and to address for treatment needs in the community. These offenders will receive expanded drug treatment courts, mental health courts, and other specialty dockets from around the state, particularly in the more rural areas where no such diversionary options are available.
Pay raises for probation officers and juvenile justice staff are also on the table, so are pay increases for state attorneys and public defenders. And a bulk of the budget also focuses on taking care of lawsuits facing the Florida Department of Corrections.
We spent $62.8 million to address health care issues in the Department of Corrections, including hepatitis C. We spent $23 million to enhance mental health treatment in our prison facilities.
That's similar to what's included in the House's criminal justice budget proposal of close to $5.2 billion. Delray Beach Republican Representative Bill Hager leads that budget effort in the House.
This budget proposal is focused, as it ought rightfully be, given the needs on the Florida Department of Corrections. In addition to reach our targets, we've eliminated any number of vacant positions that have been vacant for longer than 180 days. We've eliminated some projects from the base budget. We've maximized, as in last year, utilization of trust funds where appropriate.
Like the Senate, Hager says it also includes different agency priorities as well as member projects. And with the biggest chunk of the budget, Florida Department of Corrections Secretary Julie Jones says she's grateful to the committee.
I really appreciate the work that this committee did because I know we kind of suck the air out of the room sometimes. And I appreciate the work of staff, everything that you did, and your ability to meet the needs of our litigation and give us a good budget to work with to keep our inmates and our officers safe. And I look forward to working with you through the rest of the process to the end, but really appreciate everything that the committee and staff did.
Meanwhile, these are still preliminary figures, and the House and Senate are still weeks away from coming together on the actual criminal justice budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Home rule is a growing subject of debate in the state of Florida. Local government leaders are fighting against preemption and a House that many say is particularly aggressive in its efforts to dismantle local rules that it sees as crossing the line. Now, as Regan McCarthy reports, the issue is before the state's Constitution Revision Commission.
CRC member and former Democratic Senator Chris Smith says the issue of home rule is an important one for people living throughout the state of Florida. He says he knows that because they told him so.
When we traveled the state, we heard certain things. There were about five or six topics that kept coming up, and this is one of those topics that kept coming up.
Home rule hasn't always been a given in the state of Florida. CRC member and Republican Senator Tom Lee says it was created by a former Constitution Revision Commission.
In the 1968 Constitution, up until then, there was no such thing as home rule. 37 people, similar to us, sat down in 1968 and put three amendments on the ballot. One of them created home rule. At that time, we had less than 5 million people in our state.
Since then, Lee says the state has grown, and with that growth has come new technology and new ideas. In an effort to govern those, the state has taken back some of the local control by passing bills preempting local government ordinances. And at the same time, Lee says some local governments have gone, in his opinion, a little overboard in making new rules.
There are people in the legislature who believe that home rule is a little bit like girls gone wild. And, you know, some of this home rule authority, I doubt very seriously in your community, knowing a little bit about your community and the governance of your local commission. But in some parts of the state where local governments have just taken this home rule and are beginning to set up really their own state.
Lee says an extreme in either direction doesn't make much sense. But he notes the current situation has led to confusion.
There is a concern developing in our state for the broader good of the state's economy that this home rule is creeping into creating 67 separate states, each with their own set of rules that make it very difficult for business to do, for businesses to conduct business across county lines, because there just simply isn't consistency in some very important guiding principles of the underpinnings of our economy.
On the other hand, Bob Solari, a CRC member who's also a county commissioner in Indian River County, says he thinks home rule serves an important purpose.
One reason why the Florida Constitution put in home rule is because they wanted to add a check against the Florida legislature, just to balance things off between the state government and the local governments, and that's one of the strengths of home rule. This proposal, as I see it, simply firms up one of those checks and balances that ought to be in the Constitution.
Lee and Smith both have proposals before the CRC that address home rule. Lee filed a proposal to significantly limit home rule authority. But the measure appears to be stalled after an amendment grandfathering in current ordinances failed in the local government committee. Meanwhile, Smith's measure would put more restrictions in place for lawmakers to pass legislation preempting local control. Smith's measure passed its first committee and is awaiting a hearing in its second committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A proposal that would make it tougher for future state lawmakers to raise taxes advanced today through its first Senate panel. That even though the proposal would not go as far as a tax limit approved by the House. The Senate Finance and Tax Appropriations Subcommittee voted 4-2 along party lines in support of the proposed constitutional amendment, which would go on the November ballot. If voters say yes, there would have to be a 3/5 vote of the House and Senate before taxes could go up in the future. Right now, a simple majority is needed for most tax hikes. The House version, though, is a bit tougher. It requires a 2/3 vote by both chambers to raise not only taxes, but also fees. Advocates of the higher bar say it shouldn't be too much of a stretch if the state were in dire need of more revenue in emergencies. But opponents fear the proposal could further shift tax burdens to local governments, leave the state unable to respond to environmental and educational crises, and also reduce services for families in need. Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida State University eases up slightly in its crackdown on Greek organizations following the death of a student in a hazing incident that turned fatal.
And I think others are beginning to realize that that kind of activity, that kind of hazing is not going to work at Florida State University, because we're not going to tolerate it, and I hope the national organizations aren't going to tolerate it.
There's a proposal that would guarantee dependent children an attorney when they have to go to court.
I wasn't able to voice any of these in the courtroom at my young age at the time. I didn't have an attorney. I was stayed in those foster homes the whole time, having to deal with it myself.
And a Senate bill looks to raise awareness on postpartum disorders for new moms.
We're going to normalize what this is for moms. And that's a big thing. That's an important thing.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Florida State University is rolling back portions of a ban on Greek life after the hazing-related death of a student. Kate Payne reports fraternities and sororities will now have to meet stricter rules to stay on campus.
Florida State's fraternities and sororities are getting back some of their privileges. Recruitment and philanthropic events are back on the table. Social events and alcohol at school functions are still banned for now. President John Thrasher made the announcement Monday.
Let me say this. Some of the best leaders we have on campus come out of our Greek community. They really do. And we want them to, you know, preserve that. But on the other hand, they've got to buy in and understand that that kind of activity is putting fraternities and sororities around the country on the precipice of being extinguished.
He says the school's Greek organizations have worked with the administration to come up with an agreement. But Thrasher says he still needs to see more evidence that the groups can police themselves.
Hazing and alcohol, they mean to change. And I'm, that's why we've not actually lifted the ban on alcohol.
To prove they're serious, fraternities and sororities will have to comply with a slate of changes, effective immediately. Chapters have to hire a police officer or security guard to be at all social events and tailgates. And there's a new cap on the number of events the organizations can host when serving alcohol. Students will have to do risk management training, and the university will hire more staff for its Office of Greek Life. And organizations will have to maintain an average 2.5 GPA, says Vice President Amy Hecht.
All of these measures are going to continue to be assessed and evaluated. I will be creating a Greek advisory council to help me assess and evaluate and make recommendations as we move forward.
FSU can set rules for the official organizations and, to some extent, monitor what goes on campus. But many of the university's 7,000 Greek students hang out informally and live together, some in off-campus housing. Do four roommates having a beer after work constitute a Greek social event? Hecht says it's not always clear.
Some organizations use the number 3. Some use 5. I think for us, it's the perception. And at all times, you are a member of these organizations. These values that you espouse are with you, no matter whether you're on campus, off campus, in state, out of state.
And the FSU Police Department's oversight is limited. They generally don't patrol off-campus parties.
So we don't monitor. That's a misnomer.
FSU Police Chief David Perry says it's partly a staffing issue.
we, again, are putting it back on the student and their behavior to make the right decision, make the right choice. If the police department receives a call for service, we're obligated to go and at least investigate that call of service up into certain parameters when we're dealing with people in their personal space and private properties.
And that's important. The incident that spurred the ban didn't happen at a frat house. Pi Kappa Phi pledge Andrew Coffey died after drinking a bottle of bourbon at a fraternity event at a rented house off campus. 9 members of the organization have since been charged with felony hazing, and the chapter has been shut down at FSU. But for the rest of Greek life, President Thrasher says he has to trust them to change the culture.
I don't know. There will be. But I will say the difference now and the difference then is we had a tragic death. And I think that group is no longer here. And I think others are beginning to realize that that kind of activity, that kind of hazing is not going to work at Florida State University, because we're not going to tolerate it. And I hope the national organizations aren't going to tolerate.
There's no set timeline for when the Greek groups might regain the rest of their privileges, but it could happen as soon as this semester. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
The Florida legislature is considering legislation that would stop public colleges and universities from having dedicated free speech zones. But Lynn Hatter reports while many lawmakers say they agree with that, they're also split over penalties in the bill that could result in students being fined for protesting speech they may not agree with.
What I currently have experienced at Florida State is my first semester I went to a worship group called Crew. I'm not sure if anyone on this committee does know who that is. But what we had is a professor come out mid-worship and shut us down.
That's Florida State University student Charlotte Davis, a member of an organization that hosts organized prayer on Florida State University's campus. Meanwhile, Jen Sanchez, a student who works for a conservative group called Turning Point USA, says when she goes to recruit more students to her cause, she is relegated to so-called free speech zones, which are usually in out-of-the-way areas.
I don't think it's fair that I have to table in an area that doesn't get that much foot traffic. In terms of trying to get more members for my organization, I don't believe that it's deemed appropriate that I have to table in an area that's kind of secluded, in an area that not many people know exactly where we are.
Sanchez and Davis say they're tired of being told what they can and can't say and where they can and can't say it on their college campuses. Both students argue free speech zones are unconstitutional by limiting where they can exercise that form of free expression, and Republican State Representative Bob Rommel agrees.
Campus Free Expression Act. This bill defines the term free speech zone as outdoor areas of campuses and public institution of higher education. It clarifies that an individual or institution may not infringe upon the expressive rights of others, and an institution is prohibited from restricting expressive ideas to particular areas of the campus, designating them free speech zones.
Rommel's measure also cracks down on student and faculty disruptions to that speech, and if it happens, there's a legal framework to address it.
The bill empowers the individuals and the Attorney General to defend free speech rights by creating a state cause of action. Remedies for violation include monetary damages, reasonable court case, and attorney fees. A 1-year statute of limitation will be set.
Those who try to break up free speech activities with speech of their own could be sued. But Democratic State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith has a problem with that. He likes doing away with free speech zones, but he thinks the litigation part is a step too far.
I mean, at this point, if I'm David Duke, I'm coming to Florida. Why? Because if I can get a space at UCF, at UF, at USF, UNF, I'm going to sue everybody. There's going to be plenty of material disruptions. I'm going to sue students. I'm going to sue the campus.
One person's free speech could also constitute another's right to protest that speech, and Guillermo Smith says that should not result in a lawsuit. Florida's public universities have seen clashes over speech in recent years. Florida State University hosted former Breitbart editor and self-described provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos. The University of Florida hosted Richard Spencer. Both resulted in student protest in and outside the events. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Children removed from their parents due to alleged abuse or neglect would have the right to have a lawyer under a measure before the Florida Constitution Revision Commission. Devondra Alston reports some worry that could do more harm than good.
23-year-old Destin Vega dealt with abuse in group homes and didn't live with his parents before he received an attorney to represent him in court. Vega says having an attorney is a part of his success story.
I wasn't able to voice any of these in the courtroom at my young age at the time. I didn't have an attorney. I was stayed in those foster homes the whole time, having to deal with it myself, and growing up, losing all sense of hope and ambitions in the world, thinking that I was trashed because of the state. When I was finally appointed an attorney, all that changed in an instant.
As a kid, Vega was represented by volunteer guardian ad litems, but...
But when I went to court, occasionally, it would change. I never really met them. They didn't really speak to me. They would just show up in the courtroom at a time, and they said, this person's your guardian ad litem. I'd say, cool. And then court proceedings would go as followed, and then I'd go home.
Jacksonville's supervising attorney for the guardian program, Christine Meyer, says guardian ad litem has a multidisciplinary team that speaks with anyone connected to the children to do what is in the best interest for them.
And I'm here today simply to put a face to what Proposal 40 has made invisible, and that is the 170-plus guardian ad litem program attorneys who are in courtrooms every day across this state, zealously advocating for abused, neglected, and abandoned children. Our mission is one thing and one thing only, and that is to represent the best interest of children to whom the court has appointed us.
At issue is a debate over how such kids should be represented. Meyer says the volunteer ad litem looks at all the documents for the child and acts as a friend, a mentor, and an advocate. Both sides say they want to protect kids. Supporters for private attorneys say they're needed to give kids a say in their future. Opponents like guardian ad litem worry about cost and whether if what the child wants is in their best interest, since most kids in dependency court are under 10 years old. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel, gets us up to speed on some other legislative happenings.
Legislators and staff generally use the first part of Monday as travel time, so most committees weren't scheduled to begin until mid to late afternoon today. Here are some of the bills that came up early on. Senate Bill 538, entitled Governmental Relations with Venezuela. If this bill passes into law, it will prohibit the State Board of Administration from investing in any American company which does business with the government of Venezuela. The bill does allow the governor to waive the prohibition if the Venezuelan government collapses. It was voted favorable by the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Finance and Tax and has one more committee stop. Three bills passing through the House Health Quality Subcommittee. First, House Bill 657, Licensure of Internationally Trained Physicians. This bill provides additional options for graduates of foreign medical schools to practice as a physician in Florida, as long as the doctor demonstrates proficiency in English, has completed an approved residency or fellowship, and has been licensed in another country for at least 10 years. It has two more committee stops. House Bill 291, the Prescription Drug Donation Program. This bill broadens the 2006 cancer drug donation program to allow unopened prescription drugs, not just cancer drugs, to be donated to the renamed Prescription Drug Donation Program. It has one more committee stop. And House Bill 1337, sponsored by Representative Pigman. This changes the term Advanced Registered Nurse Practitioner, or ARNP, to Advanced Practice Registered Nurse, APRN. This is in uniformity with the majority of states. It also establishes that a clinical nurse specialist, or CNS, is equivalent to an APRN. This bill has two more committee stops. And finally, House Bill 957, entitled Crime Stoppers Organizations. This bill shields the identity of someone giving tips to a Crime Stoppers organization when the identity of that person could be disclosed through a criminal proceeding. House Bill 957 passed the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee and has two more committee stops. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, for many parents, no stone is left unturned when preparing to have a child. There are books, classes, and blogs to prepare both mother and father for just about anything. But there is an often overlooked condition mothers may have once their child is born, and a bill in the Florida Senate looks to shed some light on this, as we hear from Andrew Quintana.
Lina Acosta Sandal is a marriage and family therapist who once suffered from an overlooked side effect of childbirth.
In 2005, I sat on the floor of my baby's room, and I planned my suicide. I wanted it to look like an accident, so that my child and my husband wouldn't feel the pain of the possibility that I had committed suicide.
Sandal was suffering from postnatal depression.
Now, I had everything. I had the toys, I had the family, I had an amazing community surrounding me, but I had just spent 34 days in the NICU, and nobody spoke to me about postpartum disorders.
She was able to get the help she needed and eventually founded Stop Parenting Alone, spreading the word on postpartum disorders like postnatal depression. However, to her surprise, the subject matter was not taken very seriously. She spoke about an experience she had on Telemundo's morning show.
Do you know how much I have to pull teeth to get them to let me do a segment on postpartum? And then when they finally let me do a segment, they were like, let's do it on men. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, they get postpartum disorders as well. So whatever you want. And, you know, so far I've only done a segment on Telemundo's national morning show on the possibility of postpartum disorders in men. And They saw it as a cute, different thing. And that says so much.
This lack of understanding and representation has led to Senate Bill 138. It requires the Department of Health to create public service announcements on perinatal mental health care. It also requires that birth centers add a mental health screening to their postpartum evaluations, something that the bill's sponsor, Broward Democratic Senator Lauren Book, says has gone completely overlooked.
The fact that there are only 8 postpartum psychosis beds in the country. We can do better. We must do better. There's a lot of misinformation, a lot of things we don't understand and don't know about postpartum depression.
The bill also establishes 2 toll-free hotlines. One is for parents dealing with a postpartum disorder, providing information on the subject matter and directing them to the proper healthcare provider for further evaluation. The other is for the healthcare providers, which Lauren DePaola, owner of Postpartum Wellness and Family Counseling, explains can be most effective.
What we hear about are most OBGYNs, who are the experts of health for us as women, maybe get at most 1 lecture. Hopefully that's changing in some states, but maybe at most 1 lecture on the mental health of their patients.
The bill has 1 more committee before heading to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ange Quintana.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Devondra Alston, Andrew Quintana, and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport, and please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. A resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.